It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, and we put the band back together after a couple weeks of being off.
Good
finally.
To see you.
Yeah.
Good to see you. Hadn't seen you in a couple weeks.
Yeah, been traveling and all kind of stuff come up. So, yeah. But we're back.
We're back.
Yeah, we're back just in time for, well, everything. Everything as we get started here into the month of September. That means dove season, teal season, you know, preseason bow hunting.
Just end about of, everything happens this month.
Yeah, well, a lot of things get started here, yeah. And we got a lot to talk about on today's show. Also, this is going to be the last weekend for Snapper. So, wrapping up on the 4th.
Yeah.
So, you get the Labor Day holiday, yeah. And then Snapper wrapping up for this year.
And it went a lot longer than they thought it was going to go.
Yes. Because remember, it was kind of, a maybe there at the rodeo.
That's right. Didn't know if it was going to make it to the rodeo. But then we got a few more pounds, too, added to our allotment. So, they ended up making us go all the way through Labor Day, which is, that's okay. I wish it'd be longer, but that's okay.
Yeah, and we're looking at, for next year, and we'll talk more about this, of course, before Snapper season gets started next year with Scott Bannon from Marine Resources. Yeah, and you can see the post here on their Facebook page. It says Alabama Marine Resources Division announcing that the 2023 Private Angler Red Snapper fishing season will close at 11:59 p.m. on Monday, September 4th. Alabama's 2023 federal allocation of red snapper is 591,185 pounds and is anticipated the quota will be caught at the time of the announced season end date. So there you go. It says MRD anticipates an increased Alabama's quota for the 2024 season based on a rule to be approved by the U.S. Secretary of Commerce in late 2023. So and we've talked to Scott Bannon about that and Chris Blankenship before. We'll talk about that further, but what we might look like for 2024.
Right.
So okay. That's it. So here's the transition. So now that snapper season ends, all eyes go back to the Mobile Tensaw Delta
and Sweetwater.
And that Sweetwater. And when we talk Sweetwater, we talk about Captain Wayne Miller, and we talk some bass fishing in the Delta. Hey, Wayne. Do we got it? We have Wayne.
Hey, there how's it going, guys?
Going good. Hey, all that snapper talk had put him to sleep. But
Yeah, you're talking about a lot of stuff that I don't pay any attention to.
That's something that he doesn't have to deal with. No bass fishing tonnage enclosures going on there. You just fish.
No, that's right, man. I tell you what, too, man. The things are really lining up good right now. I don't know if y'all have been out here lately, but we got all the rivers are down, stable levels, and, the river, the main rivers have cleaned up. And, if you saw the Mobile, you would just really get excited. It's got that green tint to it.
Yep, that perfect color.
And even starting to see some shrimp move up in it, too, Sean.
Well, that's okay. I mean, you already beat me to my question there. So you got that level. Shrimp are showing up. How far up are shrimp showing up? How far north have you seen them?
I have seen them all the way up to 12 Mile Island so far.
That is good news.
It is.
Because, it's just barely September. That's good news.
And I haven't seen a lot of it, but I have seen some Jack Crevalle in the main rivers, too.
Well, you can keep them elsewhere.
any time you see them coming up, you know what's going on.
That's right.
The
things are changing.
Yeah, and how's the fishing been? How's the bass fishing been?
It's really been good, Sean. I mean, the primary, really the good bite has been in the afternoons, but that's because the tide we've had. We've been having a high tide during the day, and that water doesn't really get, moving until about mid-afternoon. And late afternoon, in the dark, man, it has been wide open. I mean, catching a lot of fish and catching quality too. So, as you would expect with the hot water, the water temps that we've had, these fish really get active during times of tidal movement.
So what are the water temperatures in the Delta right now?
Well, Mike, they've actually come down a little bit. I mean, you know, they were running, you know, 92, 93. And, you know, but some of the I know yesterday afternoon I was out on the Mobile, and, you know, I saw some, you know, 87, 88. So, you know, it just depends on where you are. You get off in some of these creeks, and, you know, I mean, it can fluctuate, you know, 3 to 4 degrees. But, well, you know, any drop in that water temperature is welcome this time of year.
Absolutely. Now, are you fishing rivers mainly right now because the water's so clear?
Well, you know, what I've been doing, you know, I've primarily in the mornings and the afternoons, I've been going up in some of the bigger creeks and the lakes and, you know, targeting grass. Because I've been having a really good topwater bite on, you know, on floating worms, on buzz baits, and even frogs. But then, you know, if I'm out during the day, you know, I primarily target the main rivers. And when I've been doing that, I've pretty much been sticking with soft plastic, fishing Texas rigs, you know, and targeting wood structure on the main rivers.
So is there a lot of grass in the rivers right now?
No, not in the main rivers. You know, there's not. So, but, you know, the wood structure, especially, you know, that first, seems like the first hour, that tidal outgoing tide, man, those fish, you know, they kind of position themselves on that wood. And, man, when you can figure out exactly how they're setting up on it, man, you can just run a lot of those main river banks and catch a lot of fish, you know, because they're set up there to do one thing, to eat.
Yeah, but, I mean, and the depths you're talking about, though, some of those places aren't that deep, right, on that wood structure. I mean, if wood is lodged on the bottom, it's not super deep.
No, it's not. I mean, you know, but one thing that you'll normally find is that, you know, They're relatively close to deeper water, but they like to be right on the edge of that current. So anytime you can see a piece of wood protruding out of the water right on the edge of that current, or you can see it under the water like stumps or a log, you know, that's always a place, you know, it's worth your time to stop and try to pick it apart. But again, the key to that a lot of times is figuring out how the fish are set up on it. And by set up, I mean, at times they'll be on the front of the wood structure. You know, even with the current blowing, they'll be on that front side. But as the current gets stronger, they'll move around on that back side. So, you know, a lot of times it pays big dividends to really try to figure that out. Because then you save a lot of time as you run that pattern. You know, you just know where they are.
Yeah, there's a truth to that, too. And I know you're talking about later on that the tide gets picking up more. They may go to the backside. But we talk about that in offshore fishing. You come up to a rig, and your mentality would be, oh, the fish will be on the backside in the current break. But that is not that's not the deal. They are on the up current side,
if you most know, if, time,
I mean,
right.
Not saying there's not some, but I mean, that's usually where the fish are, and I guess that's competition. If there's food coming through, I mean, I want to be the first one in line to get some.
That's right, man. It's you know, it's really peculiar. I mean, I think we really underestimate, you know, how these fish, you know, move around and position on structure, but I think, you know, one of the mistakes we make as fishermen is a lot of times we'll abandon a good piece of structure before we really fish it thoroughly, and a lot of times we miss fish because of that.
Well, if always fishing in a hurry can make you miss fish. I've done it.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Just get in a hurry and you're catching, you know, a fair amount of fish one way, and you just fishing hard, and you just go past some things that you probably need to slow down, and maybe you're catching them on spinnerbait or crankbait. Sometimes you need to slow down and probably throw some plastic.
Yeah, and, you know, that's one of the, you know, really one of the biggest negatives associated with power fishing is, you know, a lot of times you'll catch maybe one fish off a key piece of structure, and if you would just slow down and pick it apart, you know, you might catch three, four, or five more fish off that one piece of structure. But, you know, it takes that discipline to slow down and do it. And it's hard for all of us because, man, who doesn't want to throw a spinnerbait and just keep, you know, rolling along?
That's right, especially if you're catching some on it. Yeah. You know, if you're catching fish on spinnerbaits, I don't want to stop. I don't want to throw anything else hard unless they happen to hit buzzbaits on top. That'd be the only other thing I'd want to slow down a little bit for. But if they hitting spinnerbaits, yeah, I'm going to keep on going.
Well, you know, a lot of times, too, you know, on a key piece of structure, you'll catch a fish on a spot where you expect to catch it. You know, even in a tournament, a lot of times, if that's a good keeper fish and you put it in a live well, you can come back in 30 minutes and lick that same piece of structure, and there'll be another fish pulled up on that key spot on that piece of wood.
So, I've done that many
you know,
times.
That's something that I do all the time, and it's amazing how many fish you can catch off of it because there's a reason they're set up there. You know, I mean, it's a place that they can ambush, get out of that current and ambush, you know, food that's coming by them with the current.
Yeah, speaking of, okay, go ahead.
I was going to say, they're sitting there waiting on your spinnerbaits, what they're doing.
But speaking of, like, food, so we're talking about spinnerbaits and different baits, but we start off with the fact you're starting to see shrimp up there. What are these fish eating this time of year? I mean, later in the year, I know they're really getting into shrimp. Right now, or is it? It's still crabs, or is it finfish, or what?
I'll tell you what, right now, it's amazing how many fish, when I swing them into the boat, they're spitting up little, you know, dime to quarter-sized crabs all over my boat. I mean, you literally have to stop about every hour, 2 hours, and clean those little crabs up, because you don't want them getting in crevices, because...
No.
They'll put off a pretty pungent odor after a day or two.
Oh yeah.
But that's what these fish. I mean, in the middle and lower delta right now, man, they're eating crabs just like potato chips.
And that goes back to like color selection you've talked about in the past with us too. The reason why those blues, you know, whether you're throwing a Sally or throwing a crawfish imitation soft plastic, that's why those blues work here maybe better than like some lake upstate.
Yeah, it really is.
Do you ever throw a crab imitation bait at all?
Is there such a...
They do make it. Absolutely do, yeah.
You know, they do make some that, you know, you can... And, you know, I've caught fish on them, but surprisingly, they don't work as good as you would think they do. I mean, I have more success with little crawfish imitation bait. I think a lot of it may have more to do with the color and the size.
Yeah.
You know, because these fish in this delta right now, they're not eating big, massive, you know, bait fish or big crawfish. You know, most of the stuff they're eating is fairly small.
So, I mean, yeah, and that's got to be tough, though. I mean, because you think about a normal spinnerbait size or something like that, it's going to be way bigger than a dime or nickel size crab.
Yeah, it really is. So, I mean, and that's one reason why over the last 2-3 weeks I've really had to, you know, slow down with soft plastic. But man, I have caught so many fish with it. You can catch some fish power fishing, but I mean, just it's minuscule compared to what I'm catching when I slow down with that plastic.
What about, you mentioned the shrimp up. What about redfish? How redfish still pretty regular for you out there?
Yeah, I've been catching one every now and then. They're not, you know, I'm not seeing them like I know I will in another month. But they're still out there, I mean, And like I say, I'm starting to see Jack Crevalle up in the main rivers. And, you know, anytime you see that, you know it's a pretty good migration of pogies, shrimp. I mean, they're not just coming up there to you know, swim around and check out the rivers.
For sure. All right, talk to folks about this. If they want to get a trip booked with you right now, obviously fishing's good. Catching, it's amazing, come fall fishing with you. How do they do that? How do they find you?
They can reach me at 251-455-7404.
Captain Wayne, as always, we appreciate it. We'll let you get back to it and check in with you real soon.
Okay, guys. Have a great one.
Will do.
Thank you, Wayne.
Captain Wayne Miller, coming right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have you all along on this September, start of September edition of the show. Lots to talk about, lots to do here. Of course, we've got an update on the bass fishing world from Captain Wayne Miller. On the offshore world, got anything new to report outside of Snapper? What you studying? Anything? How's King fishing been?
Fishing's been good offshore. It really has. It's, you know, just a matter of... Not many people have been going, at least not my friends, but yeah. The people that I know that have been going, fishing's been pretty good. The tuna fishing's been good. Of course, we had the storm this past week that I'm sure is some people are just now, you know, getting ready to go back out this weekend for the first time.
Which often livens things up.
Does, yeah. I know there's been some really big swells out in the Gulf, so I don't know if that's subsided down any right now, but, you know, the last few days it's been some pretty big swells, but I think it'd be good this weekend. The water's clear, the water's doing good,
right?
Fishing's been good. Everybody's been going that I've talked to,
right?
Been catching them. I just haven't talked to that many people who's been going, just a few of my buddies been going, not many.
So, and you wrap up this month, I don't have it in front of me, but I think Trigger and Amberjack both wrap up now. They've already wrapped up, haven't they? Check your fish rules app. I could do that as we do the show.
Yeah. You know, that's something you do have to pay attention to because it has Triggerfish and Amberjack been in.
Amberjack's closed.
Okay.
And Triggers are, let's see, because Amberjack was closed like last week or it was the first of the two. I mean, because Trigger was based, I think, on a tonnage, but Amberjack was based on, you know, federal dates. I think that's right. So, yeah, we'll find out on Triggers. But, yeah, so Amberjack closed. Let's see. What does that leave you? Tuna?
Well, yeah, you can go do some deep dropping, catch some scamp and some, you know, some grouper right there and some different things and catch snapper and tuna.
Well, you can catch snapper. You have to turn red snapper. You have to turn back. But the other snappers you can keep. Beeliners.
Right. Yep. Beeliners. Yep. So, you know, you can still go catch a mess of fish right now.
That's for sure.
Yeah. You know, of course, the Ling. Ling's been good this year. It's been really
I've heard great report. I just didn't get to go enough to test that.
Well, and me either, Sean. I really haven't been that much this year. You know, it's just crazy. It's just, of course, I go where my grandson goes.
And that's right.
He's had so many different things going on, you know, that if he don't go, pretty much I don't go. So his schedule is always tight with so many things going on in his life. So anyway, it's just been a kind of a short year for me.
Okay. Well, and check your app, but it looks like Trigger's still open, but check your app before you go.
I'm going this weekend, so we'll hopefully, if everything's good, if the weather's good, I'm going.
And by the way, we talk about it, but to remind y'all, the one I use is called Fish Rules.
Yes.
It's a free app. It works for Apple or Android phones, Fish Rules. And what it does is it uses your GPS for where you are. To tell you you're getting Alabama stuff here, but if you were traveling down to Florida, it sees where you are. It tells you what the seasons are. The federal's there, but it overlays the state with it as well. So it's useful.
Right.
It's useful and it updates it as soon as the information changes out there.
Yep.
All right. Other things that take us away from the water. I can't stand it. It's that time of year. You got dove season. You got teal season. You got a lot of stuff heading your way.
Am I going to get to dove hunt with you?
If I get more than eight and I decide to shoot doves. Yeah, we only start with it. So you've got so you've got North Zone. So North Zone opening up today, noon for the North Zone. And this is actually, I was talking to somebody the other day, and she's like, "Oh, I hate it. I have to work Saturday morning. I'm not going to be able to shoot doves." I said, "Well, you're not allowed to."
That's right. You so can't, you're not missing anything.
Right. She said, yeah. "They get off at noon." I said, "That's perfect." Plus, I mean, who was like, you shoot them later in the afternoon. So, yeah. So it starts up North Zone, and both North and North Zone starts at, which is everything except, how many counties make up the South Zone? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I think 9.
Yeah.
Mobile County and Baldwin County down in our neighborhood are South Zone. Everywhere else right in here. Well, here, South Zone is Baldwin, Coffee, Covington, Dale, Escambia, Geneva, Henry, Houston, and Mobile counties. Right. Everything else is North Zone. So if you're shooting in the North Zone, if you're not in the South Zone, opens up at noon today, and then starting Sunday, starting tomorrow, it's morning and afternoon. September 3rd through October 22nd is the first split. Then the second split, November 18th through the 26th, and the third split for North Zone, December 16th through January 14th.
Yeah.
So, which is the last two splits are like the ones nobody pays attention to, but hey, people have good dove shoots then.
Yeah, it's so hot right now.
Yeah.
I used to go, well, I have in the past, you know, first week or 2 weeks of the season, and it's so miserable out there. It's just no fun. Not to me anyway.
Yeah.
If there's a ton of doves, it's not too bad, but if there's not many doves flying, it can be absolutely miserable out there.
Yes, very much so. It can be. When there's no doves, it can be miserable, kind of.
Period. But if it's hot and very few doves, it is miserable.
And, you know, we've done this in past shows, so we probably won't. But if you are responsible when you go out onto a field for how it's prepared, even if you didn't prepare it. If you see something obvious baiting, even though it's not your field, you can still get a ticket.
That's right.
So, and people say, I can't get a ticket. I didn't prepare the field. Uh-uh.
That's right. If you hunting it and you see seed, crack corn, that kind of stuff out in the field, I would advise you to instantly go back and get in your car.
Yes, and leave.
Yes.
Leave. Now on the wheat side of it, we've talked, and you can go to Outdoor Alabama, and they have a lot of great videos. What is a normal planting practice for wheat? We don't have time to go through it on the show. You can go through it, but I mean, if you got dirt clods and grass, and you got some piles of wheat out there, that's not a prepared planted wheat field.
So, and it's date specific too.
Yeah, by normal agricultural practice.
That's right. They don't plant wheat in late
January
August.
January.
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, so check that out. So okay, so that's North Zone opens today, and the first split runs from today through the 22nd of October. For the South Zone, those of us in Mobile and Baldwin counties in Coffee, Covington, Dale, Escambia, Geneva, Henry, and Houston starts a week from today, September 9th. Same thing, starts at noon, and the first split for the South Zone is the 9th through the 29th of October, and then it lines up, the rest of it lines up with the North Zone. It's November 18th through the 26th and the 16th through January, December 16th through January 14th. So it is open North Zone. Next week, it's open South Zone. Also open a week from today, teal season opens on the 9th.
That's your big deal.
Yeah, I kind of like it. So that's open.
You kind of love it.
Yeah, I guess see if I got time to get out there. I have not felt any enough cool weather move in that I think we got a
deal. You're just like me. There you go.
Yeah, probably something like that.
That's what the problem is. You just not care.
That's right. Coming right back, we'll talk a little more about the birds and also the cameras, some new advances in cell cameras I want to talk about out there as well. So it's all straight ahead. Back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have y'all along. And a reminder, too, that you can catch the show by podcast and share it. It posts up sometime today after the show, and you can get it through Facebook. We'll put the link up there, or if you have the FM Talk 106.5 app, or you go to our website, or anywhere you subscribe for FM Talk 106.5 podcast, this show shows up as well. Plus, you get to hear us repeat this show later tonight and on Sunday as well. So check it out there. All right. We and I were talking about engines during the break. And yep. I have not Put new engines on the boat this year. Thought I'd be using it a lot more. Did not, but they, it's a nice thing. And
things change.
Yeah.
You know, you think, well, I'm going to go this weekend, I'll go next weekend, the weather happens, or, you know, with your kids, my grandkids, you know, there's always something going on. It changes your mind whether you're going or not, but that's just the way it is.
I did go trout fishing. Last weekend I was up in Pennsylvania, not speckled trout, but some of them
cream trout.
Yeah, so rainbow trout and brown trout. Enjoyed that for a little bit. So,
catch them?
Yeah, caught them. It's a lot of fun. So,
how about that?
I enjoy that. It's funny, and my cousins will ask me too. They're like, "You go catch big fish and all this. Why do you run to that dang trout? Because it's different and it's fun. And it's hard to fool them,
and it's got some letters in it. That says FISH.
Yes, that's
need
right.
To be caught.
Yes, they need to be caught. So I like it all. So that is for sure. We mentioned on the bird season. So teal season getting started next weekend. I hope. I hadn't even looked at the long range. Usually we get a little. When I say, and we had one about a week ago. When I'm looking at a front, it's not. It's just that there's a little pulses of air from the north that dry it out for a day or so, that bring teal in.
Right.
You know, I think I've talked about it on the show. I've seen teal show up in the Mobile Tensaw Delta, and I used to live in that delta. But I saw them show up as early as July before, late July. You know, because it's like a bell curve. They don't all come at one time.
Sure.
But yeah, there's some trickling in, and there's some still will be coming in way after teal season is over. But yeah, the bulk of them, we hope, is sometime starting next weekend coming in. So that's a thing around the state. I got that goose season thing open, too, for the resident geese, the old sky carp that are
We can go to Mitchell Park and get as many as we want.
Right. The population is growing there. And they are, I'll tell you the other spot, is Providence Hospital. On the grounds there.
Yeah.
I was coming into work the other day, and they were out in the street. They're out in Airport Boulevard.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people get run over there. Imagine a goose walking around on airport.
No, that's not for a goose.
Yeah. True. Goose might have better sense than some of the people walking across the airport. But that's a whole other show. I do that one during the week. That's on the bird side. And so hopefully y'all have good dove hunts and good teal hunts. We'll be talking about that next week. Some pretty good gators killed during the season. So some pretty good gators.
Some real nice gators. Sure was. What's the biggest one that you heard of?
That 15... It wasn't super heavy, but it was, I think, that was Mississippi Gator. There's a 12, a 12 plus here killed that was 540, I think. Pretty good bull gator.
Right.
And I think that was coastal zone, which is hard. So, you know, it's first year I haven't guided gator hunts a long time.
Right.
And, guided the coastal zone last year. And there's some big gators in the coastal zone, but they're not, it's just not one gator after another after another. Like, there's a big one that video came. My brother put a video up on Facebook of a stud over there by Daphne Pilings.
Sure.
And there's obviously some big gators in the coastal zone. But the difference is, if you gave me my druthers, I had to guide somebody to kill a gator, I would take the southwest zone every day, which is everything north of I-10.
Yeah.
Because it's just, number one, it's just more area to hunt. Because you think, oh, the coastal zone, look at all that. But we're only hunting the shorelines. The middle of the bay, you're not hunting. You know, and there's only so many places up Dog River you can go and Fowl River you can go, you know, and down the bay. There's definitely some big ones. And there's big ones down there and South Baldwin, down around Fort Morgan and all that. But it's just not one after another after another.
Yeah.
That's a good thing when you hunt the southwest zone. If you give me, you know, if we were in a race to kill a decent gator, a 10-foot gator, not maybe, but a 10-foot gator.
Not a 12 or 14.
Right, a 10-foot gator, and you said go and wave the checkered flags. I think I could beat you if you give me the southwest zone over the coastal. I think I'd beat you quickly.
Right.
There's just more of them. You know, but there are some studs in that coastal zone, and it helps because, you know, these are the same gators that they're going to get calls from, citizens going, remove this gator. It's better to have a hunter be able to go do it and enjoy it and, you know, get themselves a trophy than have to go kill it as a nuisance gator, you know. So that's a good thing.
I'm surprised up around Miller's Ferry that there wasn't a big one.
I just didn't see it post up.
That's where the big ones come from for some reason.
Stokes Gator, Mandy Stokes Gator, came
that's
from
right.
Miller's Ferry.
That's right. And the Mississippi one, that was a new state record.
Yeah.
I think it was, what,
it's
it
15, it was 15 feet.
800 something pounds,
yeah.
I think.
It was a stud.
Yeah, that was.
So, I mean, it's a sure enough big
monster.
Gator. Yeah, big gator.
Absolutely.
That's the one I was thinking about, because that one here was 12, I think, 12 and 540 is what I think it was. I also mentioned, hunting-wise, too, a couple things to get into. Obviously, prepping, you and I were talking during the break that you had gone up and done some spraying.
I did.
Spraying your fields.
And I messed up. I should have went 2 or 3 weeks ago and did my spraying. I did not realize this is the first year since I've had that property that I know of that the grass has never gotten that tall. I sprayed. I don't have about 10 acres of field, mm-hmm. so I don't have to get a tractor and a big sprayer and all that. I got a small sprayer and 25-gallon sprayer. I just had to fill it up about four or five times. But mm-hmm. anyway, it was over the top of my buggy.
Like Johnson so, grass and all that?
Yeah, Johnson grass. So I don't know how good my spraying is going to do. I put way more Roundup on it than I normally would.
Man, you spendy. Stuff, the dang Roundup is...
Well, that spray head that I've got, it's just one spray head, and it jots out high and out to the sides.
Yeah, it's a boomless sprayer. Yeah.
Boomless sprayer.
Yeah, I run those and boomed. I do both, yeah.
But it wouldn't go very far out uh-huh. to each side because the grass was so tall. So I went over it a lot more than I normally mm-hmm. would, used more chemicals than I normally would, more water than I normally would. So I don't know how it's going to do. I'm going to go back up there in about 2 weeks and see what I need to do because I may not get to do the throw and grow or mow and grow or what do you do? What is it? I never can pronounce. What is it?
Throw and mow?
Throw and mow. There you go. So I
like
what
a poor man's no-till. Yeah.
But that's what I've been doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, after you told me about it and how
you had success.
And very successful. The oats and the wheat mm-hmm. came up just fine. I mean, there was no problem with it. And I didn't have to disc the fields. But, mm-hmm. I mean, you have to have some rain. You have to have some moisture in the ground, and you have to know that some more rain's coming to do that. At least that's the way I...
So, but you sprayed them, and you're going to say, depending on the kill... On that stuff, whether you're going to throw and mow or not.
Yes, I mean...
It'll make your job easier, even if you're going to disc it, though. I mean, that...
Yes,
I mean,
it will, but there's so much grass in there, I just don't know that it's going to kill it. But I'll find out. In another couple of weeks, I'll go up there and look at it, and I'll decide on what I need to do. Maybe I need to bush hog and bush hog high.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's one of my... if people are looking... And, you know, each year, that's why on some of the reruns that we did while I was out, I think I ran one of our... old throw and mow shows because it's the thing that gets me more emails and calls here to the station is when I talk about throw and mow.
Yes.
And I don't claim to be an expert. I'm just a guy that's been messing with it for probably 10 years now, a little more, and had very good success. And I hunt places where I don't have the kind of dirt you have in the Black Belt. Yeah. I mean, the best I got, sandy loam. You know, some of it's sandy. And I'll get back to that in a second, too, about choosing what battles to fight. But, like, tips on spraying is and I often would do this in July, and I, find a field that's going to get too high and mow it high. Don't take your bush hog down low, but pick it up even with the you got a 3-point where the wheel's off the ground.
Yes.
Okay.
Or even a little higher.
Yeah. Raise it up as much as you can.
Yeah.
What you're doing at that point, you're just taking the tops off of it. So when you go in, because you don't want to, people say, bush hog it like that, then go right in and spray it. You don't want to do that. Because once you injure that plant by mowing it, okay, number one, you have less leaf surface to spray. Also, the plant kind of pulls back for a second and is in defense mode. You want to mow it and then wait before you spray it. You want it to start growing again. So you mow it high, and that lets it, when you go in there, you don't have the problem, because I've been in the same boat as you've been.
Yep.
You mow it high, so when you do go spray it to kill it out, then you get a good even spray. Another thing that if you're, and I'll tell you, glyphosate is like, buying dang platinum.
It is.
So one of the things you can use, now it's a pain, believe me, I got pairs of Carhartt jeans that are so stained that they'll never be used for anything but spraying, but when I'm in those situations, I'll put a spray ink in it sometimes, and that's, what that does is gives you the, it's like a blue, like a super indigo blue color ink, and it goes in your spray. Now, it can gum up, if you don't clean it out, it can gum up your sprayer, so you got to work on it, but so can glyphosate too. But you spray it and it gives you, it's like ink, it's like an ink pen broke in there. And as you ride through the field, you can see where you sprayed.
Yeah.
And so instead of just going, does that look wet? Doesn't look wet. It's got blue ink on it. You know you sprayed it.
Yeah.
So that's a
great idea. I've never done that.
Yeah. And you can get jugs of it at a supply store and you put that ink in there. So when you spray, you get an idea of what you have hit. And sometimes you'll ride through and think you did good. And then you say, oh man, I was missing a whole row there, you know, that didn't spray. So that's a thing that, and it's so dang cheap, and glyphosate is not. So I would say it could save you some money.
Absolutely, I would have loved to have had that last week when I was
up
there.
Mess with it though, because don't wear anything you ever want to wear again. Because you can be careful, like you're in a dang episode of MacGyver when he'd be like trying to defuse a bomb or something. You're still going to get some on you.
Yeah.
Stuff is stains like crazy, but it does a good job. Yeah. So you pour that in the tank.
There's, the ink you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah. I mean, it stains.
It's bad.
It's like your ink pen in your pocket breaks kind of thing. Yeah. It's like that. It stains like that. But it makes a big difference when you're spraying to see what you sprayed and haven't sprayed. You know for sure you got, you know, glyphosate on it. That. And then one of the things I was saying about what battles to fight and not fight. So I'm doing something different this year, too. I'm letting fields go. There's certain fields we're not planting this year. And I'm looking at them. You know, you can only put, because your situation in the Black Belt, you know, you got better soils. I have a mixture of places that, well, you can see it when you go on the land. Some fields got grass that's head high, and some fields are piddling and they're mid-calf.
Right.
Okay? That tells you something. You don't have as good a dirt there.
That's right.
And maybe letting, unless it's your favorite field to hunt or something, we've let some go this year that we're not going to plant. Let them just start rebuilding soil. May mow them a few times to put that thatch in there, let them build, and just let them go. So if you have enough fields,
I'll call Mike Eubanks and bring about 10 loads of topsoil in there.
Put okay, we'll get that arranged. Coming right back, more of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. And conversation we had during the news break there, just like what you see in a field at the end of the year. I'm getting at this. So I have certain fields that just on the same block of woods, but the dirt's not as good.
Right.
Right? And you could really, it's a good time, especially if you're like at a piece of property you hadn't gone to all summer. You're one of those folks that stays away from the woods. You ride in there, just do a critical assessment. Now, if you only have 3 patches or something like that, you got to have those for people to hunt, that's one thing.
Yeah.
But if you have like all those extra patches, you know, we and
normally nobody goes to.
Right. If you ride through your property like this weekend or next weekend, and one's got grass like Mike's talking about, this head high, you know, buggy high, and the other one's piddling around mid-calf or something like that, that tells you something. I mean, yes, you have to make more amendments to the soil, but even if you did equal amendments, and I lime the heck out of, I mean, I put.
You do it right.
I mean, 30 tons at a time out, you know, of lime, and then come in with the same fertilizer mix, you know, I run triple 17, and some fields the dirt just isn't as good. And sometimes the dirt looks almost the same. I mean, some fields you're like, well, that's like a sandy beach, and these other. But like fields on top of hills, fields that are, you know, that don't hold, like in the Black Belt, there's other problems, the field that holds too much water, but there's some fields that don't hold enough water. I got real sandy soil that drains, so some fields produce better. And it's a great time when you ride through this time of year to go, hey, you know, the old buckhorn field was 3 feet high, and this one's 9 inches high.
Right.
Okay, that's a tell. And so if you wanted to let one go for a year to try to, you know, redevelop it, maybe just bush hog it and let it lay.
Yeah.
And let it start building more topsoil. And that's the thing about throw and mow, and we'll talk about that in future shows, that's the whole idea there is to
build soil up
while you're growing a patch, but you're also building the soil up. But yeah, you also talked about like oats and wheat that come on strong in the beginning of the year.
Absolutely. I mean, people say, well, oats don't come up just throwing it out on the ground.
No,
that's a lie.
That's a lie.
I mean, I can't tell you how many people told me that. You can't just throw oats out on top of the ground and they won't come up. Well, that's a lie. It does come up.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got pictures of them. I mean, I go and take pictures of them sprouting and coming up, oats and the wheat. And the field would just be beautiful. I got oats and wheat all out in the field, you know, and here deer season comes and, you know, the deer hammering on it. And the grass gets low, you know, but then when it comes to springtime and I'm turkey hunting, there won't be a sprig of oats or wheat out there.
Yeah.
There won't be any. Now, ryegrass, there'll be tons of ryegrass out there, but there will not be any oats or wheat.
And there may be something else to it. I mean, I would think that it's because the deer select for it more. I mean, ryegrass is down the list.
Yeah. I hunted on Jim Watson's property, a friend of mine, but he passed away. But anyway, he had a big field, 30 acres, and he had maybe 10 or 12 other big fields. You know, we planted every year, and we planted oats and wheat, and I mean, it come up during deer season, just be beautiful. And even in that 30-acre field, go back in the springtime, be no wheats, no oats, no nothing out, just ryegrass and clover. We plant a lot of clover. And same with me. I'd have some clover up and ryegrass, but there would be no oats and wheat. And I had a friend of mine call me just the other day, and said the same thing. You know, it's not too far
from
me.
But clover also, and come back to clover, people that disc, you got a danger when people put clover in their misc and they're discing, they put clover in the mix. They're disking for like a depth for wheat or oats, and then the clover's getting too deep. But clover often shows itself better later, right, than earlier.
Oh, it does.
Yeah, so that's one thing that may be making up for the clover's just hitting its stride there after season.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I mean, during the, if you plant clover with your oats and wheat, you may see just a few little come up, maybe a half an inch or an inch or something. Yeah, but in March and April, it comes up strong. But my buddy up there, same thing. He was complaining about, you know, he planted all these this oats and wheats, and at the end of the season or in springtime, there'd be none. And then I talked to another buddy of mine that's up there by us, and just yesterday, actually, and I told him about my situation. He said he could combine his oats and wheat. They come up so strong.
My wheat does that. I got fields, not all fields, but I got fields where I could make a wheat harvest.
Yeah. So I don't know what the soil difference is. My buddy Jim Watson owns the property. He went and talked to people that just plant wheat, farmers, and just said, what are we doing wrong? I mean, we experiment on everything. You know, just barely put it like an inch in the ground, cultipacked it, put it on top of the ground because it'll grow on asphalt.
It'll grow in the back of your truck,
In the past, we'd been, disking the fields up pretty heavy and then throw the wheat out and then lightly cover it up, and that wasn't working. So we tried everything, and the 30-acre field that he had was the real tell that if you can't grow wheat and oats in 30 acres or you don't have any signs of it in March and April, then I don't know what – something's going on. I can't tell you what it is.
Yeah, and I don't know at that scale. But one thing, there's a cheap piece of research equipment you could add. And it's easier said than done. It took me a while. I mean, it's like, I'll get around to it. Build an exclusion cage. Grab you some chicken wire and some T-posts.
I've done that.
And that is one of the things that helps you see. And it was interesting to me to not just browse pressure, but to see later in the year that inside that cage, that exclusion cage, and y'all probably know what we're talking about. Just, it's a tube made out of chicken wire held up by a T-post to keep the deer from eating on it so you can see what's growing. Is other grass would be as high as grass, but there would be some of the plants inside the exclusion cage that didn't seem to exist outside.
Yeah.
Especially I'd be looking at it a lot later after deer season, turkey hunting or walking through and go, look at that clover inside it. It is showing out like a magazine cover. And I'm looking around, I'm like, well, there's very little here outside.
a sprig here and a sprig there.
Right. So that helps, helps go, okay, that gives you the real. So you could do that in each field too and see, hey, do we get that wheat growth that's just being knocked down by the deer, or is it not, if you have that exclusion cage, at least you have something to as a benchmark to say that's what could happen if it didn't have the browse pressure.
And more than likely, that's what's happening is the deer are eating it down.
Which is what we want, which is what.
Yeah. No doubt that's what we want, but you would think there'd be some in the springtime, but there's not.
Also, good news, I mean, nothing's like it used to be, but fertilizer prices seem to have come down a little bit here, so y'all shop those prices out there. It seems a little bit better on fertilizer out there. So I know we're talking early for a lot of people for planting. I won't be planting probably till the end of October, but time to get ready.
It's kind of like gas is coming down. Yeah, nickel.
Take what you can get. All right, we'll do it again next week. Glad y'all were here. And remember, check us out, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.